Ladies and gentlemen, I'll call to order the Energy Policy Committee at 8:10 on the 13th of March. Tonight, we are continuing on with the policy omnibus bill. The other day, we had a walkthrough of the DE3 to House File 956. We had an opportunity for testimony from the audience. Tonight we will mark up the bill, and hopefully we'll finish going through the two dozen or so amendments and be able to vote on the bill tonight. That is the hope. Representative Hortman, it is your bill. Would you like to move House File 956?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to note for the record a quorum is present, and
Thank
I'd like
you.
To move House
quorum
File
is present.
956.
Representative moves House File 956 to be recommended to pass and re-referred to the
Committee on Commerce.
Committee on Commerce.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the DE3 amendment to House File 956 to get the bill in the shape I would like.
Representative Hortman would like to move the DE3 amendment to House File 956 to get the bill in the shape that she would like. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed say no. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The House File 956 is now amended with the DE3 amendment. We will now work off amendments to the DE3 amendment. Representative Hortman, you have a few amendments, a few author's amendments. Would you like to start?
I do. Mr. Chair and members, I outlined at the walkthrough a few amendments that I would be moving at the beginning of the hearing. I would like to move the A5 amendment. It is the substance of House File 1326, authored by Representative Kelly, and pertaining to otter tail cost recovery.
Representative Hortman moves the A5 amendment to the DE3 amendment to House File 956.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hortman, sorry, Representative Grofflo.
Thank you for Representative Hortman's clarification. That's not the Kelly bill. That's the McNamara. McNamer bill.
McNamer bill.
So you I just and
Representative
so the spreadsheet doesn't get messed
you
up.
You are correct, Representative Grofflo. I forgot.
Very, very well done. Thank you very much. Representative Hortman, would you like to tell us briefly about the amendment before we vote?
It allows for cost recovery for Big Stone air pollution controls.
Are there any questions from members about the A5 amendment? Got any questions? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, say no. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move A7, which is the substance of House File 1084. I believe this might be... might have been a Kelly bill regarding cost recovery for out-of-state facilities.
Representative Hortman moves the A7 amendment to the DE3 amendment to House File 956. Representative Hortman, can you tell us a little bit about the amendment, please?
Mr. Chair and members, it pertains to cost recovery for Excel for transmission construction that occurs out of state but is to serve Minnesota customers and is approved by MISO.
All right. Are there any questions from members to the amendment? All those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, say no. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A8 amendment. This is House File 1015. It was a seltzer bill, recovery of gas infrastructure costs. It is a bill brought forward by Excel and pertains to their replacement of their gas infrastructure to upgrade their gas service infrastructure.
Thank you. Representative Hortman moves the A8 amendment. Are there any questions for members on the A8 amendment? Seeing no questions, all those in favor of the A8 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, say no. The motion prevails. The A8 amendment is adopted. Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A9 amendment. This is the substance of what was in House File 1000. It is Representative Kelly's bill regarding funding for clean energy resource teams.
Representative Hortman moves the A9 amendment. Are there any questions from members on the A9 amendment? All those in favor of the A9 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, say no. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, members, I'd like to move the A16 amendment. This is the portion of the Morgan bill pertaining to community solar.
Representative Hortman moves the A16 amendment. Members, is this amendment in your packets?
No.
Okay. If the page would pass out the A-16 amendment. We'll take a moment for that to happen.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Garofalo.
May I suggest that we just, while the pages are up, so they're not making multiple trips, if there's any amendments that haven't been distributed to the committee, they just distribute all of those now. Just always trying to make life easier for our staff.
Representative Garofalo, you are a master of efficiency. Thank you for your suggestion.
Mr. Chairman, it's tough being
Representative
the greatest.
Garofalo?
It's tough being the greatest, but I think I do a pretty good job. So,
Representative Garofalo, point well taken.
Mr.
Representative
Chair
Hortman.
And members, the language on community solar and Representative Morgan's bill has some problems in it. There's one problem that the administration has. There are some problems that Excel has. I agree with, the criticisms that Excel is bringing forward, and what we're trying to do is match what we're doing with our program here to what they're already experiencing in Colorado and that they know how to work with. We have a lot of technical changes that need to happen in the community solar provision, and those changes did not get completed in time to make the deadline, but we will be doing some things that I think Excel will like a lot better in the Commerce Committee in the nature of a technical amendment to the community solar language.
Thank you, Representative Hortman. Are there any questions from members in light of her comments on the A-16 amendment?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for Representative Hortman and for staff, if we could, you know, instead of walking through the five pages of technical changes, if we could just have before the Commerce Committee hearing, if we give an updated research summary pertaining to the changes. Don't need to do it now, just so I think people know where they're at, but it'd just be nice to have that as part of the research summary. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. Mr. Eloff, is that possible? Thank you, Mr. Eloff. Are there any other questions? Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Looking at 4.3, that subdivision, I guess I would think that there's a little bit of conflict in the language with the main bill on the renewable energy credits, although I almost prefer this language to the main bill language.
All right. Thank you, Representative Quam. Any other questions? Seeing no further questions, all those in favor of the A-16 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed, say no.
No.
The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we should go to maybe a few of Representative Quam's amendments. Or we could go to a few of Representative Falk's amendments.
Representative Quam, do you have some amendments to the bill you'd like to offer tonight?
Let's take about three Representative Quam amendments, and then let's take about three Representative Falk amendments.
We'll spread the love around a little bit. So, Representative Quam, would you like to pick an amendment for us to begin with?
Yes. A-13-0239.
Representative Quam moves the A-13-0239 amendment. You had to pick that one first, Representative Quam. Representative Quam, would you please tell us about your amendment?
It's a fairly simple, straightforward amendment that would allow for consistency in that it would, on page 11, line 7, strike with a capacity less than 100 megawatts, and be honest that hydro is renewable.
So on page 11, line 7, Representative Quan, I want to make sure I see this. So you are just...
Mr. Chairman?
Just a second, Representative Garofalo. So you would leave hydroelectric, but you would strike with a capacity of less than 100 megawatts, Representative Quam.
That is correct.
Thank you. Representative Hortman, I think Representative Garofalo has a comment. Would you like me to come back to you, Representative Hortman? Yeah. Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, does everybody have a copy of the delete all amendment in their packets? Because I don't have it. Do you have it, Madam Chair?
I do not. You know, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hortman.
I think we should take a recess for 5 minutes while we get everybody the copies that they need.
That is a good idea. The committee will stand in recess to the call of the chair. The committee will return to order. Thank you. Now that we have the amendments that we need, the paper that we need in front of us, Representative Quam, we are working on your amendment. Representative Hortman, we are awaiting your words on the Quam amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I urge you to reject the Quam amendment. This guts the renewable energy standard by allowing the counting of hydropower from Canada.
Any other questions? Representative Quam, and then...
Garofalo can go.
Thank you.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hortman, just to be clear here, so a 100% carbon-free energy source, that's 100% natural, guts the renewable energy standard. Just want to make sure the members of the committee and the public understand that. That's what you're saying on hydropower?
Representative Hortman.
Representative Garofalo, yes.
Representative Quam.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to add that water, that renewable resource, actually falls in Minnesota and flows into Canada. So we are supplying the fuel, so to speak, for the generation of this carbon-free renewable resource.
Thank you very much, Mr. Quam. All those, Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hortman, what's wrong with hydro?
Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, members, when the 2007 renewable energy portfolio was adopted, there was a lot of discussion about whether large hydro from Canada should be included in the standard or not. The deal that was made at that time is it was not counted.
Representative Scott.
But we're not them, and this is a new deal.
Representative Scott, you and I might disagree on the Quam amendment, but I would encourage members to vote no.
All those in favor of Amendment 8130239, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
No. The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would go the next in sequence is the 240, A13-0240.
Representative Quam moves the A13-0240 amendment. Representative Quam, would you like to tell us about your amendment?
Certainly. This would delete Section 14, which starts on page 11, and the effect would be to maintain the existing statute because I think that we are not at a point of technologically being viable to adjust this, and that we do have 12 years before 2025.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Hortman, have you found this section of the bill that Representative Quam is amending?
I have. Members, I would urge you to reject the Quam amendment. It would remove the increase in the renewable energy standard for the three investor-owned utilities in Minnesota. The bill, as amended, would require that they procure at least 40% of their energy from renewable sources by 2030. The data is very clear that they're on track to meet the standard we've set in 2025. We are talking about 17 years from now, and they can meet this.
Thank you, Representative Hortman. Representative Quam.
Thank you. I understand that 25 by 25, but you are adding an additional 15% burden in the remaining 5 years. So that would be at a much more accelerated rate per year, and therefore I think that with technology the way it is, I think we're a little bit overly aggressive with the standing of technology.
Thank you, Representative Quam. All those in favor of the A13-0240 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
No. The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Representative Quam, one more for now.
Thank you. And the next one sequentially is 241.
Representative Quam moves the A13-0241 amendment. Representative Quam, would you like to tell us about your amendment.
Thank you. It is on in reference to page 13, lines 24 through 30, and it would have the effect of taking the solar standard and having it less aggressive by being at, you know, 0.5 by 16, 1% by 20, and 2% by 2025, and then having in line 30, instead of 10%, having it 5. Again, I am, you know, somewhat of a fan of, at some point, going with some solar, but I think we're not technologically there, and would offer some caution. And so this is not getting rid of, but it's, you know, having a more moderate approach.
Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And Representative Quamwell, I appreciate your commitment to a solar standard in Minnesota. I do think that the solar standard that I have selected is one that's appropriate for a state like Minnesota that's above average.
Thank you, Representative Hortman. Seeing no other questions, all those in favor of the A130241 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no.
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 The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. All right. Representative Quam, thank you very much. We'll get back to you for some more later. Representative Hortman, where would you like to go next?
I believe Representative Falk has an A4 amendment.
Representative Falk, would you like to move the A4 amendment?
Yes, I would, Mr. Chair.
We'll let everybody find the A4 amendment. Representative Falk moves the A4 amendment.
Okay, just to explain briefly, this is a bill we heard and it was laid over. It deals with the technical aspects of interconnections at DG levels, doing some clarification language, clarifying where the interconnections take place, who's responsible for them. It's quite technical in nature and had no opposition in committee.
All right. Thank you, Representative Falk. Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, I'd be interested if anybody in the audience would like to testify in favor of or opposed to the Falk Amendment.
Is there anyone in the audience who would like to share a few words about the A4 Amendment? Please, a few words, though. Thank you. Please state your name for the record and share with us your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Tom Johnson with the Great Plant Moody Law Firm. Our firm represents Juul Energy, and Juul Energy is strongly in support of this amendment. The principal feature allows for an expedited process for small cogeneration or renewable projects to interconnect with into the distribution system. Without having to go through the very extended MISO process, and it can do that because the interconnection is occurring into systems that are operating at less than 100 kilovolts, which is the threshold for MISO jurisdiction. And this we see as having a very significant benefit for small projects.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Are there any questions for the author or the testifier? Thank you, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to the author of the amendment, do the other states in the MISO system, do any of them do this already?
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Garofalo, I'm not certain of that, but I know FERC has given jurisdiction to the states for these voltages that are less than 100 kV for interconnections.
And Mr. Chairman?
Representative Garofalo, I was distracted for a moment.
No, by all means, finish up. It's okay.
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, to the author of the amendment, we derailed that train of thought. Are we violating or are we jeopardizing any contracts or agreements we have with MISO? Do we have the authority to make the changes that are being taken place in this?
Representative Falk?
Yes.
And Mr. Chairman, I just had the request of staff that as this bill goes to Commerce, we could just have a highlight in the research summary of these changes. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. I think staff can take care of that. Any other questions? All those in favor of the A4 amendment, please say aye.
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 All those opposed, no.
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 The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Hortman.
I believe Representative Falk has the A10 amendment.
Representative Faulk, do you have the A-10 amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I would move the adoption of the A-10 amendment.
Representative Faulk moves the A-10 amendment. Representative Faulk, can you tell us about your amendment, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is another bill that we heard. This is the funding for the IRE program at the University of Minnesota out of the Renewable Development Fund. It restores the appropriation to $5 million per year up through 2014.
Representative Faulk, thank you very much. Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, I support the amendment.
Are there any questions for the author? Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. the members to the and to the author, over the last couple of years, there's been quite a bit of action in the Renewable Development Fund, so much so that the this body asked the legislative auditor to do a review of the Renewable Development Fund, its history, and so on and so forth. And he said, well, bygones are bygones, but going forward, there are several things that the legislature should probably do to clean up the fund, legalize the fund, and establish some protocols for spending money, which really isn't our money. It actually is XL ratepayer money. And so one of the things we did was we took this particular grant and said that IRE was eligible to apply for, just like everyone else, a grant from the Renewable Development Fund, but they had to go through the process and do the reporting points and the mile markers on progress on their projects and so on and so forth, instead of operating sort of as an independent entity that just was lucky enough to get $5 million from this fund every year or two. So this kind of undoes, I think, some good legislation that passed bipartisanly just 2 years ago, and I'd encourage us not to adopt this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Beard. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. To the author of the amendment, what is Subdivision 1, Paragraph G?
Representative Faulk.
Oh, let's see here. Subdivision 1, paragraph G.
Representative Faulk, would you like to phone a staff friend?
Yeah, I'd ask Mr. Eliff to clarify.
Mr. Eliff, can you tell us, can you answer Representative Garofalo's question?
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, I believe that's the provision in the Renewable Development Fund statute that was put in 2 years ago, or last year, I guess. Which says that the legislature shall not make grants directly out of that fund.
Exactly.
Representative Rafa?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members to the committee. I would just recommend a no vote on the A-10 amendment. If we want to have the appropriations process go through the legislature, then let's send the money to the legislature and let's appropriate it, have a competitive bidding process. And again, if it's going to be merit-based, apparently this can't be that high of a priority. The governor, with $2 billion in tax increases in his budget, did not fund this initiative. And so if we're going to appropriate money, Representative Faulk, use the appropriations process. And I would ask members to vote no.
Well,
Representative Faulk.
I would say to Representatives Beards and Garofalo, you're welcome to put a bill in, and I think we can look at this. But I know, Representative Beard, you weren't here for the testimony, but we did have a lengthy debate about this and the quality and caliber of the people that we have attracted to this program, and they will go to another place if we do not continue to offer this. And the current appropriation process does not offer that type of certainty for the University of Minnesota.
Thank you, members. No further questions. All those in favor of the A-10 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, say no.
No.
So the motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Hortman.
I believe Representative Faulk has the A-11 amendment.
Representative Faulk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move adoption of the A-11 amendment.
Representative Faulk moves the A-11 amendment. Representative Faulk, would you speak to your amendment, please?
Members, this is the bill I had that dealt with net metering. It ups the net metering statute to 105 kilowatt capacity. Does some cleanups. It's got the renewable energy premium on there. Deals with the clarifying language of how those costs are reflected back to the GNT. Tries to clean up some of the conditions and stipulations regarding the interconnection of these contracts, and also offers that if you exceed the nameplate capacity of the system, that it the utility would reimburse at the avoided cost rate, and I would nullify the contract. So this is the same as the bill we heard, and I would ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Faulk. Representative Hortman.
I support the amendment. I know that the administration has a different approach, and I think we should continue the conversation on how to marry the two probably not inconsistent approaches in some way.
Thank you, Representative Hortman. Any questions? Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to the author of the amendment, just to make sure I understand this right, so you're getting rid of the 1 megawatt power producer stipulation in the bill, and you're knocking it down to 105, correct?
Representative Faulk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Garofalo. There are two pieces of legislation that are moving in tandem. They are not mutually exclusive. We're probably going to have to do some cleanup language to make them fit together, but no, it's not what this amendment is doing, is moving that down to a megawatt, or from a megawatt down to 105. These are basically two separate approaches trying to reach the same goal.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Garofalo?
So, Mr. Chairman, Representative Falk, Section 5 of the bill, we're changing the definition of small facilities from 1 meg to 105, and then on page 5, line 19, under a net metered facility, you're changing that requirement as well to 105. What am I not catching here?
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's not my intention to go and nullify what the administration is. We have to work to make these two parts fit together. Part of it's going to require some additional drafting, and just the way that the amendments are fitting together with the amendments or the parts that were put into this bill, it's going to require a little bit of additional work. I don't know if Mr. Eliff can offer any additional guidance on just kind of the mechanics of putting the things together as they fit into the bill. If not, it's not all right.
I don't know. Maybe that's something, as Representative Portman suggested, we need to work
we
on
have to,
with
we have to marry the parts
Mr.
up together.
Eliff,
yep.
As we move ahead, right?
That's
okay,
correct.
Thank you, Representative Falk. Representative Garofalo?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Falk, I know you got a majority in this committee, and my guess is you're going to have a majority in the next committee you go to. The way you've described it, and maybe I'm wrong, but the way I'm looking at this, I think this may do something that you do not intend to. I'm actually all in favor of you reducing the 1 megawatt requirement if it's doing. I have an amendment later on to return us to 40 kilowatts, but you may want to consider withdrawing this and offering this in the next Commerce Committee. Otherwise, I'm ambivalent over whether I want to support your amendment or not, Representative Falk. So can you just briefly again walk through members what it is you're trying to accomplish with this amendment so we understand the intent of it?
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Garofalo, this is dealing with the net metering statute as it currently is on the books. I know the administration has got some alternative proposals. They're not necessarily mutually exclusive. I think the ways that you get to them, if they want to approach, say, like the 1 megawatt level with the payment structures, they're not the same as this is. This is dealing with basically retail rate and the green pricing up to 105 kW. What's beyond that, what they're looking at is between whatever you use to offset your retail use and up to the 1 megawatt, that's basically an avoided cost, and we're trying to mirror these parts up. So,
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Representative Falk, would a person be able to put a 1 megawatt solar installation in their yard if this was passed, if your amendment was adopted?
Representative Falk.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Garofalo, that's not my intention.
Representative Garofalo? Representative Beard was on the list too, Representative Garofalo. Should I go to him and come back to you in a minute?
Yeah, I think we're... you might want to withdraw the... Well, it's up to the author of the amendment.
Representative Beard.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry I missed the... I think this was presented as a bill on Monday, and I missed it.
I believe so, Representative. Representative Beard.
I kind of understand, even though I don't agree with the 40 kW, yeah. At least there was a rationale from where that came from. Where did the 105 come from? Is there scientific basis or some rationale for that?
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Beard, there's a number of groups that want to see this raised up to 100 kW. One of the groups with the Minnesota Farmers Union, I chose 105 basically to avoid some of the spiking issues that people have seen. It gives a little bit of comfort, a little bit of cushion. There's methane digesters or small wind turbines. There's other types of technology that would allow some growth above and beyond the 40 kW right now. The Farmers Union, I think, has in their platform 100 kW is what they'd like to see. This was okay. The 105 was chosen just to go and give a little bit of room so that you wouldn't have the interconnection issues.
Okay.
Representative Beard?
That's all I want to know. Thanks.
Right. Representative Garofalo? All right. Without any further questions, all in favor of the A11 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, say no.
No. No. No.
The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair. Now we get to the little bit harder stuff, too. It's not as simple. Maybe we should go to Representative Garofalo's amendment. Before.
All right, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll move the A13-235 amendment.
A13-235. Okay, there we go. Representative Garofalo moves the A13-235 amendment. Representative Garofalo, please tell us about your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Just to be clear, under current statute, we have a 40-kilowatt limitation. And the reasons for this are that we don't want to have people become using their renewable energy production at their home as a profit center. There's no such thing as free money. And what happens under current law is that if you you are paid at a certain rate to be reimbursed for that power. Now, what we're going to have under this legislation that they amended with the Falk Amendment to 105 is you're going to have a massive financial incentive to install these sorts of panels in your house to make money, not to produce energy to meet your own energy needs or reduce your energy bill, but to make money. The subsequent effect of this, for specifically for municipals and rural co-ops, is that you're going to have a smaller energy use grid from which to have transmission and distribution costs based off of, which will have the incentive of, which will provide for higher utility rates for those individuals, which will provide an additional incentive for more people to install these solar panels, not solar or individual power usage, not for the purpose of renewable energy, but rather to make money. And so this is going to have a dramatic effect. It's sort of a death spiral of utility rates, particularly for rural customers. Now, if the goal of the program of increasing it to 105 is to get commercial users to do solar installations, if it's to allow those things, and there are certainly many ways that can be done so that we are right-sizing the appropriate amount of energy at a specific facility to their usage. However, Mr. Chairman and members, we should not be incentivizing individuals to become their own independent power producers for the purpose of making money. And under the current legislation, the way this is drawn up, I don't think it's going to become law, but if it became law the way it's designed, I'm quite confident that we would have a special session by the end of this year to repeal the effects of it, particularly for the impacts of those in rural and municipal power agencies. So, Mr. Chairman and members, this amendment puts us back at 40 kilowatts. There are certainly ways that the author and the DFL majority can accomplish the goals of seeing more solar installations at large industrial production facilities or large power users. The way that it's designed in the bill right now is not effective, and I would urge you to support the 235 amendment.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. If you looked at a map of the country and the different net metering statutes across the country, you would find that 40 is very low, and we're behind the times, and it is time to modernize and update. I, of course, like 1,000 better than I like 105, but it's 40 is a level that was put into statute in 1981, and I would urge members to reject the Garofalo Amendment.
Sure. Any other questions, Representative Garofalo?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to Representative Hortman, so for those individuals who would install a larger system and have surplus power that they would be required under statute to be paid for, where would that money come from?
Representative Hortman.
Representative Garofalo, I think that you and I have a different opinion of the value of distributed generation. When there is distributed generation throughout the system, it decreases the demand for increased transmission costs and also decreases the demand for increased capital investment in large operating facilities that are located far away. You also eliminate the line loss of 5 to 8% in delivering the energy to the site. So I think that the value of distributed generation to the system, although it's very hard to calculate, benefits everyone. And you would probably contend that if I have solar panels on my roof and you do not, that you are subsidizing a choice I have made. And I would say to you that I have made a capital investment that you as a utility ratepayer are not having to pay for. And I would say that I am benefiting the system by diversifying the energy portfolio on the grid, and that I'm benefiting the system.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hortman, so let's understand here. So someone who puts in a 105-kilowatt system and produces more power than they use, where does the money come from to pay them? Who pays the bill?
Representative Hortman.
Representative Garofalo, just the same people who pay for the generation at any facility that generates the ratepayers.
Representative Garofalo?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Hortman. Yeah, the ratepayers do. Mm-hmm. This is an additional subsidy beyond the 1.33% assessment tax, sales tax increase on energy that's included in the bill. And what's happening is you're having people's neighbors pay for this. Now, the transmission lines, the utilities don't get to take the transmission lines down. They're still supporting them. They don't get to decommission any generation. There's no savings. The generation has to stay online because this is an intermittent power source. So what we are doing is we are mandating additional energy production into the system. We are not reducing costs because the transmission and distribution lines are staying in place. The generation isn't being reduced whatsoever, and we're shifting that cost onto other neighbors in that system. And particularly in the areas that are going to be most affected by this, areas of declining population, areas of declining manufacturing base, what you're going to see is a dramatic increase in shift of costs to other neighbors in those areas. And again, this is not for the purpose of being self-sufficient. This is a system in place that's going to be used for profit generation to make money that are forcing neighbors to pay for it. This is a very dangerous provision in the bill, and whether my amendment is adopted or not, I suspect I know where it's going to go. But I would really urge you to follow this closely. This is the kind of thing that we will get called back into special session to repeal because of its adverse impact on rural ratepayers and those co-ops that have small usage footprints.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry, Representative Quam. Representative Hortman would like to respond. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know, Representative Garofalo, you and I could have a long back and forth, and I know it's your anniversary, so you probably don't want to spend all night having this back and forth conversation. But, you know, in your opinion, if I am a generator, then the ratepayers pay for the energy that I generate. That's a subsidy. But if a coal plant in North Dakota generates and ratepayers pay for that and we send up $12 billion over the state of North Dakota for a bunch of coal, that's not a subsidy. And so I think, you know, we have different worldviews and we could have a long debate. We could do kind of a back and forth for a really long time. But what we're talking about is paying people for the generation of power. And we do this with coal-fired power plants. We do it with natural gas peaking facilities. We do it with wind turbines. The benefit of solar is that it generates energy at peak load times in the summer near the site where the energy is used. And that is a value to the system. And I think that the people who generate that energy should be compensated for generating that energy.
Mr. Chairman, my final point, and then we'll stop the back and forth.
Okay, Representative Garofalo, but Representative Quam is waiting.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hortman, just to be clear, I think something you and I both agree on is that if this bill goes into effect, there is absolutely no decommissioning of existing generation, no reduced cost of transmission, and no reduced cost of distribution. We agree on that, correct?
Representative Hortman.
Representative Garofalo, there are a bunch of coal-fired power plants in Minnesota that are going to be decommissioned and go offline within the next 5 years, some of them within the next 2 years, and we will need to replace the energy that they generate. And I'm suggesting that by all the mechanisms in this bill put together, 2% of that replacement come from solar.
Yeah, but Mr. Chairman, and
Representative Garofalo, this is more than your last point, but go ahead.
But Mr. Chairman, Representative Hortman, that's the problem. You can't decommission baseline power with an intermittent power source. You can't do it. You can't take coal or natural gas or nuclear offline and replace it with solar. You're going to have an additional power source to do that, correct?
Representative Hortman.
It could contribute to the decreased need for natural gas peaking plants and significant capital investment to put those up online.
And Mr. Chairman,
Representative Garofalo, you and I like to run our air conditioners in the summer, I presume, when it gets really hot. And sometimes when we come home from work in the summer, when we have our air conditioner on, we also like to cook dinner. And we need a lot of electricity when it's very hot and sunny outside.
So the summary was, Representative Hortman, the summary is I'm right. Because you're going to have to require, the only way this works is you're going to put a natural gas peaking plant in, which is additional generation. You're not taking baseline generation off the system. You're requiring a secondary form of generation under your hypothetical. You cannot replace baseline power with an intermittent power source. There is no savings to generation, transmission, or distribution under this bill.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple points. One being that, as we've heard testimony, a regular household, 40 kilowatts is the equivalent of, you know, about 10 regular homes, average homes. And when you jump up to, you know, a megawatt, now you're talking 250 homes. That if you ended up having a cluster of these and you know, it's frequent that one person in an area puts it up and other people see and they talk to them, and that's, wow, that's a good idea, especially when you put it up, you are guaranteed a customer because this statute would force there to be a customer that would buy your product. Because if you're generating it, they have to buy it. So now you've got a guaranteed customer, a neighbor puts it up, you hear, and you jump on the bandwagon. You get a cluster of 5 or 10 of these large systems, depending on the location. If you're towards the end of the distribution, that might require the moving of a substation. That might require, our grid was set up with large point sources and feeding out, and it breaks down and smaller, that if you hit a very sunny day in the spring or the fall where there's not a lot of usage, but you've got a lot of production, and you've got a cluster of these megawatt generation facilities in an area, I have talked to several different utilities and that, and there is the possibility of having a failure with our current grid. So looking through the documentation that our staff recommended and gave, distributed generation interconnect requirements, the case for in the matter of Northern States Power petition for approval of distributed generation energy tariff, and several other documents, that they have certain kick-ins, at 60K and etc. And then on here, the metering, monitoring, control for a megawatt system, you're talking direct control via SCADA by the area EPS of the interface breaker. These are not trivial installations, and I don't see in the testimony we received adequate discussion to where I think the committee is fully aware of the repercussions of installing this. So I support the idea for now with this amendment going back to the 40 and re-looking at, like you said, this isn't 1980, this isn't 1990, times have changed. But if you look at a lot of the areas, we've got power grids that aren't, in the last 10 years installed, built, and developed. So I honestly think that there are unintended consequences, and that's why I'm supporting this. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Yarusso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Garofalo is asking us to accept his conclusion as, logically coming from the assumptions, but he is ignoring what has been said about the fact that the peak solar output is going to occur during the peak demand. And so the maximum output of the solar is not going to replace the baseline power. It replaces the peaking power. Representative Hortman has attempted to say that several times, but it wasn't listened to. And so we have a complex system of power generation. There are multiple contributions to it. Currently we have coal and nuclear and wind and hydro. All those things fit together. They adapt to each other. Solar is going to be one piece of this. And as I said, it occurs during the peak demand times, that the peak output will occur. And so he's asking you to accept his conclusion without really listening to the assumptions that are being, that he's stating himself.
Thank you, Representative Yarusso. Representative Baird.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. This has been a rapidly moving conversation with lots to say and a lot has been said. But let me just back up for a moment to a comment that the author of the bill made several weeks ago about vision. What's your vision for the future? When I queried her as to that, and I think you said that we had some things in common here when we're trying to open the market to competition, and I think that that's a noble idea, and the idea that we're kind of getting at here with your distributed generation and all these small producers, you think it's a step in the right direction, but I would submit that this is a lot more complicated and harder than it looks. You're opening a whole discussion here about something called independent power producers, and some states have almost lost their grids over this. My suggestion is we're moving pretty fast on an idea that takes a lot more understanding than we've been able to give this committee in the last 2 or 3 weeks. And there's going to be probably some more testimony about this coming up here, Mr. Chair, because we are indeed duplicating investment, and somebody's got to pay for that. So that means prices will not go down, reliability may not necessarily be improved, and we're going to be asking people to pay for duplication. There was a lot more to say, but I can say it's a free-ranging conversation that was moving fast. Perhaps when there's some other testimony, we can delve into it just a little more about why I think the motive may be noble, but the execution of this, I'm sorry, I see it as very hazardous, and especially when we're expanding peak generation, net metering proposals for more of a hobby kind of a thing to people actually getting into energy production. We regulate for a reason people who are in the energy business. We regulate them very tightly, and this is just strikes me as setting up a Wild West scenario that we're going to have some real issues with. So I'll just leave my comments at that for now.
Thank you very much, Representative Beard. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. Closing comments on this before we vote, and just to respond to my colleague, Representative Yarusso, just simply, Representative Yarusso, that is not true. Representative Hortman herself even mentioned the fact of peak natural gas plants being sited. You are not going to be able to decommission a coal, nuclear, or any sort of baseline power source as a result of an intermittent power source for peaking. And with regards to the solar curve versus the usage curve, that is simply not true. We've been handed the data in this committee matching up peak usage of when solar is at peak versus peak power usage in a retail environment. That is simply not true. We can disagree on the substance of the amendment and whether to vote for it or not, but that is just simply not true. And, Mr. Chairman, I would urge a yes vote on this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. I'll give you the last word on your amendment. All those in favor of the Garofalo amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
No. The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted.
Representative
Hortman.
Morgan, can you just repeat what number that was that we just voted on?
That amendment was the A130235.
Thank you. Representative Garofalo, I had you down for the A6. Is that the substantively the same thing that we just did?
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, Mr. Chairman, let me just take a look here.
The A6 amendment? I guess two questions. Is that yours, and does that do the same thing as the one we just voted on, essentially?
It's the same thing. So that's,
do we withdraw?
You can dispense with the A6 amendment.
Representative Garofalo withdraws the A6 amendment. Representative Hortman.
Well, let's get into the weeds.
Let's do that, Representative.
I have the A-12 amendment, Mr. Chair.
A-12 amendment. Who has the A-12 amendment?
That is my amendment.
Oh, that is your amendment. I'm sorry. You meant that literally. Representative Hortman moves the A-12 amendment. Representative Hortman, would you please speak to your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know. I don't watch enough TV to know what this is called. I think it's called a lifeline or phone a friend or something on one of those quiz shows. I need some backup from the Department of Commerce as to what particularly we're changing and why.
Mr. Grant, would you please speak to the A-12 amendment?
Mr. Chairman and members, Bill Grant for the Department of Commerce. Section 1 of the amendment deals with the Guaranteed Energy Savings Program. This is a program in current statute. Currently, the term of the energy savings agreement is limited to a 15-year term. We're proposing that term be extended to 25 years from the date of final installation. Turning to The second page of the amendment, we felt on lines 2.25 and 2.26 that it was important for the entire bill to establish what was meant by the amount of capacity entering the system, that we needed a baseline definition of that. So in, we've added a definition here that clarifies that capacity means the number of megawatts measured in alternating current, since that's the form of power that the system sees at the point of interconnection between a solar PV device and the utility's system. I don't know how, in what level of detail, Mr. Chairman, you'd like me to go through every line of the amendment. I can do that.
Just the non-technical.
Mr. Grant, I think if you can give us the substance of the amendment.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman.
Perhaps, as Representative Garofalo has requested, Mr. Eliff can prepare additional details between now and the next committee stop, unless there are further questions that members might have. So.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, the language on at subdivision 3 is relating to standby charges. This is just simply a clarification, as several bills were merged, to make it clear that for the purpose of both net metering and the value of solar alternative to net metering, that we are not allowing standby charges to be charged for customers who receive power under those rates.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Beard.
Can I ask a question to that point?
Please do, Representative Beard.
Do I understand that people that are in the program then don't have to pay their fair share of the infrastructure, or did I misunderstand what you just said?
Mr. Grant.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Beard, under the current net metering statute, standby charges are not permitted, and we're just extending that as we're extending the size range of the systems being installed.
Okay. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Beard. Representative Quam.
Thank you. Two things. One, the timestamp on this is 3 p.m., the 13th. And I was led to believe noon was the what was the deadline. And I'm just curious on this, where you've got a change from 15 to 25 years on these larger systems. What is the fit reliability numbers for systems of this size in the state of Minnesota? I'd even include the neighboring states of, you know, Wisconsin and North and South Dakota, to be able to do a guaranteed agreement for a length of 25 years.
To your first question, Representative Quam, I'll remind you that the author of the bill, the real chair, reminded folks that if there were problems getting amendments to the House research or the reviser, that she would adjust the time deadline for those purposes.
Mr. Chair, the full text of this entire amendment was emailed to me prior to the noon deadline.
Thank you very much, Representative Portman. But Mr. Grant, you're going to have to answer the second question.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm going to have to ask Representative Quam to clarify. I'm not sure what you're asking.
Exactly. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Basically, a fit is a failure in time. It's a reliability measure of systems, and it's commonly used when you do a business case or bring a product to market. You do qualification and reliability testing, and you have a lifetime characterization curve for that product, so that you know, you know, the durability, and therefore, you know, if you don't have something that isn't going to last 5 years, you're not going to have a bank give you a 10-year loan on a 5-year, you know, lifetime product. So that if we are going to guarantee in an agreement, I was, you know, I'm skeptical of 15, but I'm very skeptical of 25, because I, you know, for these size systems in Minnesota, I don't think we've got a sufficient population to give us that confidence level of 25 years. So it, since you're bringing forth this to the author, what is your reliability data for this region?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Grant. Yeah, Representative Quam, I should have provided more background when I started on the Guaranteed Energy Savings Program. It is a program to require state agencies with state-owned buildings to install energy conservation retrofits in those buildings. We're not talking in this instance about renewable energy systems, although they can be part of a guaranteed energy savings contract. This is simply saying that the lifetime of those measures typically is more like 25 years, and since we're talking about state buildings that are likely to be under state ownership, we hope at least that long, that moving to a longer term makes more sense.
Representative Quam, I would like to have Mr. Grant finish the amendment. Do you have a can we wait and then come back to you? Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Grant, please continue with your description of the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, the new language, lines 2.16 to 2.22, simply clarifies the process that a customer would use to elect under which pricing mechanism they would like to fall, either the either net metering or the value of solar tariff that is proposed in Representative Portman's bill. Most of the rest of this language on the second page is language to clean up differences in the bills that have been merged together. The language on page four is the inclusion of a new study looking at the reliability and transmission impacts of going to a 40% renewable energy standard for cooperative and municipal utilities.
Thank you, Mr. Grant. Representative Quam, I'll come back to you in a minute. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, actually, let Representative Quam finish up before
I All right, great. Thank you. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and forgive me for jumping to the conclusion that this was about solar and renewable. I was just basing that off the fact that three of the four pages are about that topic. And at the one page that's not, the only changes in there are the change of the 15 to the 25. So, you know, again, since the vast majority of this is having to do with solar and renewable, and I would really hope, since all public and state buildings are paid for, maintained, etc., with taxpayer dollars, they are the property of the citizens of this state, that we would care about the reliability of what we're installing. And I don't have a problem with, you know, these longer term things if I have some confidence in the reliability. So, you know, if you've got something that to give us today, or if you can produce that, you know, before you hit the next committee, I think that would be a prudent thing.
Mr. Grant, is that something you could perhaps share with Representative Quam or the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to.
Thank you very much, Mr. Grant. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Grant, I just want to make sure we have something on the record, is that you agree that the legislature has the authority to modify these producer payments in future legislatures, and that we are in no way making a permanent contract with anyone who's putting these solar installations in case.
Mr. Grant. Sorry. Representative, you
finished? That was the first.
Okay.
I got a couple other ones.
Okay. Mr. Grant. Representative Hortman. Sorry.
Well, he looked at me like I would know the answer to that question. Representative Garofalo, if you're asking me whether a future legislature can change what we do.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hortman, I'm making it very clear in case there should be any future litigation on this, that these payments are not a contract with those who would put in solar panels, that if this goes into effect, and current events modify that we are not able to afford these payments, and future legislatures were to go in place and modify these levels to a lower level, that is completely within our, we are not making a contract with those who are doing solar installations, that future legislatures, the intent of this legislature, of the author and of the department, is that we have the ability to modify this, that we are not locked into permanent contracts with those who would subsequently install solar panels, that is in fact the case. We are not making a permanent contract.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hortman.
Representative Garofalo, we perhaps need to think about having some language with regard to the solar energy production incentive.
Yep.
That says to the extent funds are available. We cannot in the legislature pass laws that impair contract, is my understanding, and Mr. Elif can probably help me out on this, that impairment of contracts is an issue we have to keep an eye on when we make new laws. So when we do things that are retrospective or that disrupt contracts that already exist, we have to be cautious about not impairing contract. But the intent of the bill as a whole is to set up the solar energy production incentive account with 1.33% of the revenues of each of the affected utilities, and that those revenues will pay their customers an incentive to install solar.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Groff.
And Representative Hortman, thank you. And I'm happy to work with you on that language. I just want to make sure that when I'm talking about contracts, I'm not talking about individuals and whatever agreements they reach with private contractors. I'm talking about this section of statute, that in no way, shape, or form could someone put a solar installation in place and have a subsequent legislature modify this incentive program, and they would try to argue in the courts that we have somehow made a contract with them and we are obligated to maintain these subsidy levels. That was the purpose of that. I'm happy to work with you on that language. Commissioner Grant, and thank you for cleaning up the language on page 18, line 5, where you're in fact putting in a statement that capacity that exceeds 2 megawatts is ineligible to receive these incentive payments. It conforms with the subsidy rate schedule that we see on the bottom of page 18. My question for you is, why are you putting in place a 2 meg cap?
Mr. Grant.
Mr. Chair, I would like to speak to that.
Representative Hortman.
Kind of an extended conversation with Excel today about our desire to make sure that there was a cap on the size of these projects. At a certain size, it's a commercial venture, and we don't intend to offer the incentive payment. And the legislation was unclear. We had in the reference price that it stopped at the 2 megawatts, but we didn't expressly say that projects over that we're not eligible for the subsidy payment, so we're making that explicit, what was implicit before.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Garofalo.
And thank you, Representative Hartman. I did thank you for putting that in place. It was implied, but I thank you for that. My question is, why the 2 meg cap?
Representative Hortman.
Better.
Mr. Grant.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Garofalo, obviously we need to put some sort of a size cap on this. A 2-megawatt cap certainly captures most of the solar installations that we would expect to see in Minnesota that would be eligible, that we would want to make eligible for a solar incentive.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Garofalo.
Commissioner, you said obviously we need to have some sort of cap. Why?
Well,
Mr. Grant.
Mr. Chairman, because for one thing, we want to incent as many of these projects as possible. We want to make these available for homeowners, small businesses. If we allow incentives to be paid to much larger projects than that, we will exhaust the incentive payments quite quickly.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman and Commissioner, the reason why we have to have some sort of cap on it is because people are going to get into the for-profit business of becoming independent power producers. And so right now, my final question would be that under this system, this regulatory scheme we're putting in place, you can put in 2 megawatts of solar, 30% of the cost is going to get picked up by the federal government. You're going to have a guaranteed purchase, whether the local co-op, the local service territory needs it or not, guaranteed purchase price of 13.6 cents a kilowatt hour with 30% of the tab getting picked up by the federal government. Why wouldn't everybody build these things when someone else is paying for it?
Mr. Grant, Representative Hortman.
I'm sorry, Representative Garofalo. I thought your question was directed at Mr. Grant, so I was counting my members.
Mr. Grant.
I'll rephrase the question. You're talking about a plan here. We could put 2 megawatts of solar in. 30% of the cost is going to get picked up by the federal government. Then you're going to have a guaranteed rate, whether the area needs, the service territory needs it or not. The 13.6 cents a kilowatt hour, a guaranteed revenue stream. Why wouldn't everybody build these things? You're guaranteed income, and you're guaranteed that someone else is going to pick up 30% of the tab.
Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, maybe everybody should get into this business.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative
Hortman, Garofalo.
That's the problem. Eventually, you run out of other people's money. That's the concern.
Mr. Grant.
Mr. Chairman, and to that point, if I could, I believe that these reference prices were set in such a way as to not be, not to create incentives for people who weren't intending to generate electricity for their own use. And there is still going to be considerable skin in the game from those who make these investments. This is not going to be we don't anticipate this to be a land rush to this incentive mechanism.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Groff,
and to the commissioner and the author, there seems to be a very simple way to do this, and that is to say that you don't have to get paid for anything more than your bill is. You right size it. Is that a measure that either of you support?
Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, yes, we are working on matching size to load, and we weren't able to get the language with Excel that we were working on this afternoon ready in time to meet the amendment deadline, but we are trying to match size to load.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. Representative Beard, I think you were
back next. To the contract, Mr. Chairman. I'm not as worried about the legislature changing their mind. We do that all the time around here. I'll have more to say about that later, perhaps. But I'm concerned that in the bill, we're requiring utilities to enter into purchase contracts for long periods of time. What happens if 3 or 4 years from now, some new amazing thing comes over the horizon and we change all this? Is there going to be legal trouble for the utilities who now have to completely change their dynamic to break those contracts? Are we going to be setting them up for trouble, or are they locked in because we've established this and ordered them to enter into purchase agreements with people who are engaging in this distributed generation scheme?
Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Beard. Well, that's the risk of doing business, right? Utility has 20-year contracts with wind farms. When a utility makes an investment in a nuclear power plant, that's kind of a 100-year commitment to nuclear power. Utilities make long-term commitments because their job is to provide long-term, secure, reliable power to all of us, and they are very good at their job. And part of why they are very good at their job is they make long-term commitments and long-term decisions. And we're putting this into the basket of long-term decisions that they already make.
Representative Beard.
The difference, Mr. Chairman, is that with the exception of us giving them a legal monopoly in their service territory, you have willing sellers and willing buyers and willing investors. In this case, we're mandating that certain people have to enter into contracts with other people, whether it's in the best interest of their customers or their business or not. Huge difference in how we set this thing up. Nobody can build a power plant in this state, except for very small ones here that are in favor at the moment, without going to the Public Utility Commission and proving a certificate of need, and that there is a public need, and the rate of return and the risk and how it's allocated is very carefully vetted by public servants at the PUC. This is not. This is mandated by us sitting around here picking the flavor of the week and saying this is what you're going to do for a long, long time. And I got to tell you, I'm really concerned about the legal mess we're setting up, because you know how these things change, and they will change. So I'm just a word of caution from somebody who's been around the block. Pay attention to that.
Thank you, Representative Beard.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Hortman.
I know I'm prolonging this, but I feel like I have to make the representative, the once annual Representative Kahn reference to the Price-Anderson Act. We make public policy choices all the time that impact what power our utilities purchase. If we didn't have a Price-Anderson Act, we wouldn't have so much nuclear power. I'm not really crazy about it. You know, I could say to you that the Price-Anderson Act force some nuclear power on me that I didn't want. You could say that the Representative Hortman clean energy bill is forcing some solar power on you that you don't want. As a practical reality, we make policy decisions that impact the decisions that they make. We have a difference of opinion about which one of those policy choices we each of us like. But in all cases, the policy we make impacts their decisions.
But Representative Beard?
Thank you for indulging me, Mr. Chair. But Madam Chair, the power, whether we like what color the electrons are or not, comes to us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, under penalty of law, at a very low price. We make lots and lots of it, so much so we make it a commodity. And anybody can have it. All they have to do is sign up for a meter and get it. The power we're choosing here in this little boutique program is very expensive power, and only a very few people can participate in the subsidy. There is such a difference between the way the world is and the way we're trying to make it in this bill that I just can't even get my arms around how you can comport the two. But I understand there's a difference in values here.
Well, Mr. Chair,
I just got to make that point that if we're trying to build a sustainable economy for our grandkids, we have to have a lot of it. It's got to be reliable, and it's got to be priced as economically as possible. And I guess that's just where I stand.
Thank you, Representative Beard.
Mr. Chairman, do one more act of prolonging the conversation.
Sure.
We talk a lot about baseload power, and folks who don't like this bill talk a lot about baseload power. But there are two kinds of power that we really need. We need baseload power, and we need peaking power. And you and I are very familiar with the transportation system. Mm-hmm. In 20 hours a day, the amount of highways we currently have is perfectly adequate. Mm-hmm. But 4 hours a day, we need a lot more. And so we spend millions and millions, billions of dollars to deal with that excess capacity that we need to have at those key times. The same thing happens in the power industry. When you and I come home from work at 5 o'clock on July 15th and we want our house to be cool to 70 degrees and we want to cook dinner, we need our electrical power system to provide something that we don't need it to provide right now. And we have to do peaking plants, and we have to have transmission to bring power to people. And so what I'm saying to you, Representative Beard, is that I don't dispute at all the need for consistent, reliable baseload power. But there's more to our energy system than that.
Representative Beard and Representative Hortman, if it were not 9:30 at night, I'd love to listen to you for about 4 hours because you're both very thoughtful and very passionate, and I appreciate that. But we do want to get moving here. Representative Quam and then Representative Falk, and then I would like to vote on this amendment if we could. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm looking at more simpler analogies to the two discussions that we just had, one being that the transportation analogy that you're using on highways. At times, I look at this bill as being the transport. You know, the transportation analogy I'm seeing is light rail, of where there is never full utilization, no matter what they sell us in the presentation, and rider. We don't hit the ridership numbers, and we're spending a lot of money on a higher priced form that, you know, doesn't get that utilization. I see that as being closer analogy than the highway when we're talking this. But getting back to Representative Garofalo's discussion with you, is this, you know, simplify it for me, is this like biomass that we can go back on a long-term contract and just void it? Or is this a different entity? This a different entity?
Representative Hortman.
Representative Quam, I would just give you the same answer that I gave Representative Garofalo earlier. We can't impair contracts with subsequent acts of the legislature. So, you know, if a future legislature were to change some of this, we would have to look at the impairment of contract issues and address those.
But
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't hear any of that, not a word of that discussion. When we heard a bill, and I understand the reasoning behind the bill, but we heard a bill in this committee that took a long-term contract, and because that new technology, you know, they jumped in early, they had a bad deal, we looked at that to renegotiate it, and I heard nothing from anyone on this committee about what you just stated is a concern. On, so you're saying that it's different depending on, you know, what side we're talking about, and that's what bothers me. That, you know, silly me, I grew up, everything should, everybody should have the same legal standing, and I'm gonna, you know, go on after that. But I just see a huge difference, and it bothers me when there's that inconsistency.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Falk, a brief comment, and then we'll vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm glad I'm the capitalist on this side of the issue. I do think that people should be able to, you know, be able to sell in the marketplace, because ultimately you are captive consumers. You can't pick which utility you choose, and, you know, this is part of making not just a sustainable economy but a sustainable environment, which we won't have a sustainable economy if we don't have a sustainable environment, to paraphrase Don Shelby. So I appreciate the amendment.
Representative Portman, you're the author of the amendment. I'll give you the last word, and then we'll vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. You know, this amendment just fixes some things in a bill that, you know, we haven't talked generally about what the bill does as a package. And I think it's important to note that these are some technical changes that make the whole package better. And what we're really talking about tonight, and what I think some people came here to support tonight, is the idea of going to 2% solar power by 2020 and 4% by 2025, increasing the renewable energy standard from to 40% by 2030. And I think these are concepts that Minnesotans across the state very much support. And what they would like to see, that we are being responsible and looking towards the future and preparing the state for the future in terms of our energy needs. Some of the things in this amendment go directly to that, but I wanted to speak more broadly to the bill, because I think the choices that we're making are really about the future of the state and where we're going. There's some externalities from our current power supply that we don't currently reflect in the price of that power. We don't pay for SOx pollution. We don't pay for NOx pollution. We don't pay for greenhouse gas pollution. The beauty of solar and other renewables is they are clean, and there is no fuel. And so although the capital investment is tricky, and a lot of what we're talking about here facilitates greater capital investment, the fuel that supplies those capital investments is free. So the long-term cost saves money over time. Representative Quam brought up the idea of light rail. And light rail is really similar to this in some way. And what I would say, Representative Quam, is the initial investment is large. But when you look at how long these systems last, you know, you go to Paris or you go to Rome and go in the subway system, and people took refuge there from the bombing in the 1940s. And those systems are still up and operating and moving hundreds of thousands of people every day, probably millions of people a year. And so the point that we're trying to make in this bill, and I think why it's such a good bill, is it's about making investments today that pay off for the long term. My daughter Sophie turned 16 today, and the mark for me of the legislation that I carry is whether my daughter Sophie will be proud of me. And when I went home and I said to my daughter Sophie that I was bringing forward a bill that would generate 2% of our energy from solar power by 2020, she kind of wrinkled up her nose. She wasn't that impressed. 2%? She's aware about the ice caps melting. She's very familiar with the work that Will Steger has done to educate Minnesotans. You know, I thought when he testified in our committee the other night for Representative Hornstein's bill, and he said, we will look back at 2012 as the year we lost the Arctic environment. That was powerful and compelling. And so Sophie is looking at us and saying, 2%? You know, I think you can do 2%. And we have to ask ourselves, going forward, as we look at, I passed out the schedule in the last committee we had when I first passed out the DE3 and did the walkthrough. And I wish I had my folder that had those documents in it, which is upstairs somewhere. But what I passed out was a legal size orientation spreadsheet of all the power plants in the state of Minnesota, how many megawatts they generate, and the year that they were built. I got that from the Energy Information Administration. And I also passed out a packet of articles that David Schaefer had written on, that's it, on the retirement of coal plants that's coming here in the next 5 years. we have about 15% of our coal plants that are either going to be retired or on the list to consider to be retired in the next 5 years. And so this is sort of a pivotal moment in Minnesota's energy future. And the utilities are going to have to decide, as they take off a Sherco 1 or something large like that, what are they going to replace it with? We know we have done great things in conservation at a very low cost. I think Marty Kushler did a very good job of laying out for the committee how cost-effective conservation is. And we have done so much. So conservation is part of the answer. And what I'm saying in this bill, and what members who vote for this bill are saying, is that just 2% of solar energy can be part of that solution, too. So in replacing an 800-megawatt coal-fired power plant, we can put up another 800-megawatt coal-fired power plant, or we could say that 2% is going to be from renewable solar, clean solar that's free once your capital is paid for, and that we're going to put up a 784-megawatt coal plant and 16 megawatts of clean solar electricity. I don't think that's too much to put in the solar basket. I think it's important that we have a diverse portfolio of energy to serve the state. The analogy I made when I presented the DE3 the other day is none of us would have in our 401k 50% of our investments in a single stock. But yet that's exactly what we have in our energy picture. We have 50% of our state's energy investment in coal. Let's put 2% in solar.
Thank you, Representative Horton. All those in favor of the A12 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, say no.
No. No.
Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. We're going to recess to the call of the chair. The committee will come to order. There was some concern expressed about the last vote. Representative Portman, I would entertain a motion to reconsider the vote on the last amendment, if you would like to make that motion, Representative Portman.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if you ruled how that vote came out. Did you? If you did, I voted on the prevailing side.
Mr. Chair, I want to thank Representative Portman for voting on my side.
Representative Portman, if I think I called the vote that it was affirmative vote that the amendment passed, but there was some concern expressed that I recessed after a division was called. I think I recessed before a division was called. Out of consideration for the minority, I would like to reconsider the vote and give it another shot.
So moved.
Representative Horton moves reconsideration of the vote on the last amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, no.
No.
The motion prevails. The amendment, it will be reconsidered. We are back on the A12 amendment. All in favor of the A12 amendment, please vote aye.
Mr. Chair.
Sorry, Representative Horton.
When we took a recess, somebody indicated they had wanted to testify for or against the A12 amendment.
Oh, okay.
And we had neglected to ask if there was anybody who wanted to testify.
Thank you, Representative Horton. Ms. Bergen, please have a seat, state your name for the record, and share with us your testimony.
Yes, Deborah Bergen, Missouri River Energy Services. I'm concerned about the study in the last portion of the A12 amendment. That's the first time we've seen that language. It calls for an extensive transmission study to be done, including several other concepts and other studies that have also that we would have to take into effect. And we'd have to do that in just a few months' time and report it right away next year. The wind integration study, I believe, took something like 18 months. And you're asking the municipal electrics to pay for a complex study that the state of Minnesota paid for some time ago and took a long time to take care of. That's asking a lot of the municipal electric communities.
Thank you, not Representative, Ms. Bergen. Thank you very much. All right.
Questions?
Mm-hmm. Representative Horton renews her motion on the A12 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no.
No.
The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. All right. Representative Horton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move to delete section 17 on page 13.
Representative Hortman moves to delete section 17 on page 13 of the DE3. Let members find page 13 and section 17. Representative Hortman, would you like to explain to us what section you're deleting?
I am deleting a section on renewable energy credits. It is kind of a long conversation, sorry about this. But in the value of solar, part of the value that will be calculated for the clean energy that's produced by the solar photovoltaic devices is the renewable energy credit. And so if a customer is being paid for that, then the person who is paying for that should be entitled to hold the credit. And the language that we have right now puts the credit in the hand of the person who's generating and not in the hands of the person who's purchasing the power. And this is something that I spoke to Excel about. It's in the amendment that we had hoped to bring a lot more changes in front of you today to accommodate some of the concerns that they raised. And I think this is one piece that we can do.
All right. Thank you, Representative Hortman. Any questions from members?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. Even though it doesn't look like this amendment was in before noon today, I would support the amendment.
Thank you. Any other questions, Representative Quam?
So that would be, Mr. Chair, so that would be deleting from the bottom of 13 all the way through to 1434?
It would delete all of Section 17, Representative Quam. So, yes, that looks to be an accurate assessment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do like this oral amendment.
Thank you. All in favor of the Hortman oral amendment to delete Section 17, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, no. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Do we have that, Mr. Eliff? Thank you. Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, I think we should go to Representative Beard's amendments, the A13 and the A14, or at least that's the ones I've
Representative Beard, do you have a couple of amendments for us today?
Just a moment, Mr. Chair. Let me have a look.
All right. Representative Hortman suggested they might be the A13 and A14, I believe. Is that what you said, Representative Hortman?
Well, no? Mr. Chairman, the A13 is, the one on page 8, the lease section, subdivision 10. I don't know that that's mine.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
And I think we disposed of that one, didn't we? Whatever. The A13 is, let me just have a look here a second.
Sure.
There were a couple things I was thinking about talking about, but Mr. Chairman, just as I look at the bill, the bill is so complicated and such a big reach, I don't know if I can fix it with this small amendment. So I would be happy to introduce it, talk about it, and then withdraw it, but that's all I'm going to do. So rather than delay the inevitable, let's just pass on the A13 amendment for
You'd
now.
You'd like to withdraw the A13 amendment? Yes. Representative Beard withdraws the A13 amendment. Would you like to move on to the A14, or you're not sure that's yours?
That's not mine.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Hortman?
Mr. Chair, if Representative Beard has any amendments he wanted to do.
Representative Beard?
I don't believe so, Mr. Chair.
All right. Representative Hortman?
Did anyone want to move the A14?
A14 amendment? Does anyone want to move the A14 amendment? We will then withdraw the A14 amendment. A14 amendment is withdrawn.
I believe Representative Quam has some additional amendments.
Representative Quam, you had a shot a while ago. Would you like to take another turn?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of those were deleted when we did the oral.
Okay.
And so
Why don't we withdraw those first, if we can do that simply? Which would those be, Representative Quam?
Mr. Chair. Actually, that was A13-243.
One moment, Representative Quam. A13-243. That is your amendment, and are you saying you're withdrawing the 243 amendment, Representative Quam?
That is correct.
The A13-0243 amendment is withdrawn. Representative Quam?
I would prefer to move A13-237.
A13-237. Representative Quam moves the A13-237 amendment. Representative Quam, please tell us about your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you look on page 8 and you look at lines down at line 31, 30 and 31, I like the idea of having the commissioner come up with a standardized uniform form for the contract, but I don't like that would be the only contract to be used, so my amendment would delete the word must in 8.31 and replace it with may, because I think at times things change faster than maybe bureaucracy could catch up. And that would still allow for the utilization of that function, but not enforce it. It would have to be there. And then I, again, have concerns with 20 years for the length of term of the contract. And so then I, in the amendment, delete everything after on 8.32, everything after the period, and then deleting 8.33 and 8.34. So would change it to a mandatory one choice of contract for 20 years to still have that contract, allow it as an option of a different contract if something changes, and not have it for 20 years.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Horbin.
Mr. Chair and members, I oppose the Quam amendment. It's important that people be able to enter into a 20-year agreement in order to finance these projects. Part of what's in the way of getting things going in solar energy is the difficulty in financing the project, so I would oppose the Quam amendment.
Thank you, Representative Horbin. Any questions from members? All those in favor Representative Quam.
I would like to correct the fact that with this change, it doesn't preclude a 5, 10, 15, 20, 30-year contract. It's up to the parties for the duration. It takes away an arbitrary amount. And because I understand where the vote will go, I will withdraw that. I wanted to make sure that we discussed it.
Representative Quam withdraws the A13-0237 amendment. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A13-0245, and that's page 18 and 19.
A13-0245. Representative Quam moves the A13-0245 amendment. Representative Quam, please tell us about your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This, if you go down to line 23, it would insert after the word section, not to exceed the average wholesale rate. It would then delete the lines 24 through 31 and then do a similar thing on 19.2 of inserting after the word system, comma, not to exceed the average wholesale rate.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I oppose the Quam amendment. The whole idea of the bill is we need to get this industry up and running. With a nudge, it can become a successful part of our energy future. We gave the wind industry a nudge. in terms of the renewable energy production incentive that we put in place in 1994. And now the wind industry is providing us low-cost clean power. But if we didn't provide that nudge in the beginning and allow them a rate that exceeded the average wholesale rate, we wouldn't be where we are today in having over 750. I'm not even going to try to quantify how much wind we have. Having about a third of our power provided by clean, renewable wind.
All right. Thank you very much. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The intent of this is I have concerns with the convoluted formulation to come up with the added cost, so to speak, that's being reimbursed. And the money doesn't come on trees. It doesn't fall from the air. It comes from the other ratepayers or the taxpayers. And frankly, if you listen to some of the testimony earlier before this committee from co-ops that had an average household income of $60,000, there are a lot of areas to where the rate increase that's generated by this will be paid by retired, people that don't on a fixed income that can't afford, I think, the large increases. And we haven't had, I think, sufficient testimony to tell us what the probable ranges are across time of this bill, not just a fiscal note to the taxpayers, but the fiscal impact on all of the citizens that are out there that are doing nothing other than living their lives. And if a group of people decide to put in, solar, get subsidized, they see an increase in their rate, and I think that's unfair. Again, I can do math, so I will...
Doing the math?
I had such a nice rebuttal, too.
So I will... withdraw this amendment, hoping that the author will take in consideration the possible unintended consequences to the low-income people of the state.
Representative Quam withdraws the A130245 amendment. We'll move on to the next amendment, Representative Hortman, if you don't mind. Representative Hortman, if you don't mind.
I don't mind. We'll
thank
move
you
on
very much,
amendment.
Representative Hortman. Representative Quam, how about one more? And then we'll move on to somebody else.
Well, actually, I have several more, but frankly, I see that it's going to do no change to this bill. And the whole intent of all of these amendments that I generated were to look at all the little sections and the problems and issues that are there. And I usually tend to be an optimistic person, but I have to agree with what was spoken earlier that this might be something that I can't fix, especially with out being able to amend. So I see the futility of trying to fix this beast, and I capitulate and withdraw the rest of my personal amendments.
Representative Quam, for the record, I'd like to read off the amendments and just get your confirmation that you're withdrawing them. The A130233 amendment, Representative Quam?
Unfortunately, yes, Chair.
The 0233 amendment is withdrawn. The 0234 amendment, Representative Quam?
Mr. Chair, I don't think you have to note that they're withdrawn if they haven't been offered, but you can just list them.
Okay. Thank you. I just wanted to make sure we have it right for the record. The 234, 236, 238, and 244 amendments then are withdrawn by Representative Quam. Thank you, Representative Quam.
Thank you.
We don't have many amendments left. Have we done the A3 amendment?
I don't think that one's going to be offered by Representative Falk, but we'll let him make a decision. While he's deciding, I would like to offer the A15 amendment.
The A15 amendment is offered by Representative Hortman. Representative Hortman, please tell us about your amendment.
Mr. Chair, members, this deals with the renewable energy credits, and it is a conforming amendment. When I deleted Section 17 that most people seem pretty happy about, we needed to do some conforming changes in another section. On page 8, lines 33 and 34, we're making some changes that also make clear that the when the utility buys the solar power, that they're getting the renewable energy credit.
All right. Any questions for Representative Hortman about the A-15 amendment? All those in favor of the A-15 amendment, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. The motion prevails. The A-15 amendment is adopted. Representative Falk, the A-3 amendment?
I'm not offering it.
Representative Falk withdraws the A-3 amendment. Representative Hortman, help me out here. Am I right that we have two amendments left?
Mr. Chair, I don't think... hold on, let me take a look at the A-232.
While Representative Hortman thinks, is there anybody at the table who thinks that they have another amendment that they were offering? Give the author of the bill a little time here.
Are you about to take testimony from the public?
I think so.
Thank you, by way of
I'm going to ask him to keep it short.
I may have a couple questions for a couple of them to illustrate some points, but I'll be succinct.
So, Mr. Chair, I will not be offering the A-130232 amendment.
Representative Hortman withdraws the O-232 amendment. I have a 0258 amendment before me here. Nobody seems to want to claim authorship.
I'd really like a copy of that amendment, Mr. Chair. I don't think I have one of those. 258?
Never seen one.
Okay. We did this one. I did get a copy. I don't know whose it is, though. Mr. Chair.
Representative Hortman.
I need to talk to some of the stakeholders about the 0258.
Okay.
And my understanding is the only other one out there. My understanding is we passed the A-16.
That is staff's understanding as well.
And so the ones that are outstanding that we have questions about are the 0258 and the 0261?
Those are the two that are left that I have as well. Representative okay. Horman. So you would like to take a brief recess to...
I hope that this recess will be more brief than the okay. previous recess, and I will talk to the stakeholders and find out if we need to offer these.
Members who are here should absolutely stay here, Representative Horman?
Unless they need to use a restroom or the vending machines that are located right outside.
Okay, we are at recess to the call of the chair. Committee will come to order. Thank you for your patience. I know it's getting late. Representative Hortman, nobody seems to be claiming authorship of these amendments.
Well, Mr. Chair, they were sort of mine in a way, but I'm not offering either one of them.
So Representative Hortman withdraws the 258 and the 261 amendments. We have come to the end of the amendments. I would like to entertain testimony from the public. We would like to keep it as short as possible. We've all had a chance to comment on these bills as they've come through the process, but we do want to give folks an opportunity tonight to speak for a minute or two to the bill, get on the record, and before we move forward. So is there anybody in the audience who would like to testify briefly on the bill tonight?
Mr. Chairman,
Mr.
As we're
Chair,
waiting.
While people are figuring out what's coming up, I just want to say that this bill is going from here to Commerce,
yep.
and I know there's a lot of technical things that we need to work on, and I am available to work with anybody. I know next week will be a busy week because of deadlines. I'm here for spring break, and I will spend as many hours a day talking about this bill and trying to improve it that people want to spend talking about it productively.
Thank you, Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chairman, while testifying.
Representative Garofalo, while people are deciding if they want to talk, thank you.
I wanted to request a roll call on final passage.
A roll call has been requested when we come to vote. Thank you, Representative Garofalo. Thank you. Go ahead and introduce yourself and state your testimony.
Okay. Mr. Chair, my name is Bill Black. I represent the Minnesota Municipal Utilities Association. I understand you want us to be brief again. We did testify once before, but it was limited to about a minute apiece. I'll try to be brief again. Minnesota Municipal Utilities Association is in the unfortunate position of having to oppose this bill. We would have preferred to have something that we could support, unfortunately, or even amend, but unfortunately, we don't see enough here that we could actually work with. And so we're unfortunately opposed. It's not what we expected to be to have to do. When we first saw the proposal that came from the administration, we were cautiously optimistic about the buy-all and sell-all value of solar proposal. Unfortunately, though, we've seen it change into things that were not anticipated and didn't reflect any of the input that we tried to provide. I understand that there is work being done yet and will be on this committee, and we hope to be involved and heard. It's our greatest fear that the size of the small utilities the variety of them would make it very easy for them to be lost in the shuffle. The points that we are opposed to are known by the author. I don't have to go through each one of them, but they're very serious. We want the committee and the legislature to pass something that Minnesota is going to be proud of, that everybody's children are going to be proud of. We think it could be done in a slower approach, more thoughtful approach, maybe even put off a year if we needed to really study the impacts. And a couple of testifiers came from Sioux Falls and from Rochester to have their say, and would really appreciate your hearing them out if you could find the time.
Thank you,
Mr.
Black. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Joe Hensel. I'm the Director of Field Services with Rochester Public Utilities. I do have a prepared statement, and I'm going to have to truncate in order to keep within a couple minutes. But
thank you, Mr. Hensel.
Mr.
Hensel, we understand. I mean, the time is late, but we do want you to be sure to get on the record.
Okay,
so
thank you. Rochester Public Utilities, Department of the City of Rochester. We serve 50,000 residential, commercial, and industrial electric customers within the City of Rochester. We're the largest municipal in Minnesota. municipal electric utility, that is, and we're a member of the Southern Minnesota Municipal Power Agency. RPU is regulated by the Rochester Public Utility Board and the Rochester City Council. The utility board has adopted core values, which include environmental stewardship and sustainability. We support and practice sustainability through our environmental programs, renewable energy, and energy and water conservation programs. We take our core values very seriously and measure our progress with monthly and annual metrics that are reported to our board and employees. We have reviewed the omnibus energy bill and have many concerns. We cannot support the bill as it is proposed. Let me share some thoughts. Rochester is currently making tremendous progress. We have a solar rebate program. We budget $64,000 a year for that program. The solar rebate is $1 per watt, and this equals approximately 20% of the capital cost of PV. We pay an average we pay average retail for net metered solar energy purchased from customer PV installations, and currently there is a total of about 230 kilowatts of installed PV capacity on the RPU system, and that is all on the customer side of the meter. The solar energy market is evolving and maturing. Solar technology and control technology are improving and prices are falling, but we are concerned about the substantial increase in the cost of solar as a consequence of this bill to our ratepayers. The value of solar calculation contained in the bill, which would determine the rate to be paid by the utility to the PV owner for solar energy produced, should be determined by rulemaking, in our opinion, by the Department of Commerce. Following Minnesota statutes and agency rules, we feel that this process would ensure that issues, including the impact cost to the utility, are fully vetted and decisions would reflect what's in the public's best interest. However, if customers pay the value of solar, including environmental attributes, and the solar energy production incentive is also going to be paid by our citizens and our customers, the utility should receive the solar renewable energy credits, and perhaps that has been addressed tonight. In our opinion, the proposed solar energy standard is too aggressive. Although 0.5% of energy from solar PV doesn't sound like much, as your daughter implied, even 2% doesn't sound like much. For the city of Rochester, that equates to 7,000 kilowatts of installed capacity for the next 2 years to meet the 0.5%. And comparing that to the less than 300 kilowatts of solar currently installed, it is evident that we have a long way to go in a very short period of time. At this point, we have no way of knowing how difficult and how expensive it's going to be to meet the 2020 and the 2025 standards. So we don't know how difficult that will be to attain. But we do know that the cost of the capital cost of meeting Rochester's obligation for the 0.5% would equate to about $32 million over the next 2 years. Our current rebate program, which is $1 a watt, would cost over $7 million or a 3% rate increase. The solar energy production incentive would cost RPU ratepayers $7.3 million per year, and that would require another rate increase. We have not had a rate increase in Rochester for 4 years, and we agonize over a cost increase to our customers as small as 1%. Thus, the costs we are talking about are a really big deal for RPU, the city, and its customers. Our mission is to provide the highest quality electric and water service to enrich people's lives and help businesses prosper. That's part of our mission statement. That mission is important to all of our customers, and in fact, it's absolutely critical for our two largest customers, one who is planning major growth and trying to face the challenges to control the cost of health care, and the other is forced to send jobs out of state to low-cost locations. The bottom line is the bill would result in significant costs to the majority of our customers, and that would have to be, those costs would be paid by all customers to the benefit of a few. Thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you, Mr. Hensel. Ms. Bergen.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Morgan. I'm just going to state something.
Could you state your name for the record?
Sorry, I stated it early.
Yep.
Deborah Bergen, Missouri River Energy Services. There's a truth we have to recognize, and that's Minnesotans have a limited amount of capital. You only have so much, and it can only go so far. And when you only have so much, you have to pick the most efficient use of it. Just looking at the solar mandate, 2% by 2020 will require Missouri River to install over 25 megawatts of solar at an installed cost of roughly $113 million. The problem with that is, as many of the members of this committee knows, MRES has been working very hard on a hydroelectric project in Iowa. We started doing that several years ago. So we've made our investments through 2020, but now that's an additional $113 million we didn't plan on that we're going to have to make, because we planned other renewable resources, not solar, because those renewable resources were baseload and were in centered and located good well for transmission for our members. So that's why we chose it. Now we're being told to switch midstream. And that's a big cost that our 24 municipal members will have to bear. In addition, our municipal members will have to pay 1.33% from those communities to a REPI fund that MRES can't use for that 25 megawatts of installed solar. They will have to pay a value of solar on top of that, but they don't get a say in what that value is. They don't get to consider harmonics, distribution upgrades, substation upgrades, sales at non-peak. The cost of solar, according to the, as the bill's written, isn't even considered. We talked about Austin, Texas, and what everyone's missing is Austin, Texas is a municipal electric community. The citizens of that community chose to hire a consultant, chose to do the value of solar. And the thing is, if a year from now it's not working for them, they don't have to go to the state. They don't have to change a statute. That's the value of being a municipal electric. If it doesn't work a year from now, they can switch. We don't get that opportunity, and our citizens don't get a voice in what that value of solar is. And if it's not working for them, they can't automatically change it. So those are the considerations we have.
Thank you. Who's next? Whoever's next, please state your name for the record and share with us your testimony.
Hi, thank you. My name is Michelle Rozier, and I'm with the Sierra Club as part of the Minnesota Clean Energy and Jobs Campaign.
And I'm Michael Noble. I'm with Fresh Energy, and Michelle and I are the co-chairs of the Policy Committee of the Minnesota Clean Energy and Jobs Campaign.
And we're a campaign of over 30 organizations representing environmental, faith, labor, youth groups working on this issue, and we support the energy omnibus. And within our coalition, we represent groups that have over 45 wind businesses and 54 solar businesses, as well as a alliance of labor and environmental groups. And we look forward to working with folks moving forward on this piece of legislation and see it as critical for Minnesota's energy future.
Thank you, Ms. Roche.
And Mr. Chairman, we thank Chairman Hortman for her thoughtful hearings over the last couple, 3 weeks. And we applaud her on the fine piece of legislation that she's put forward for your consideration tonight. And we pledge our unified support to work with Chairman Hortman and all the members of the committee and all the members of the legislature and all the stakeholders and the large utilities and the industries to forge the best piece of public policy that the legislature can put forward. And hopefully we'll be able to come together and have a bill that everyone in the room can eventually support, is our hope. So we look forward to having this bill in Commerce Committee, I guess, for a little while, and hope to talk to a lot of members and a lot of interest in the room in between now and then.
Mr. Noble, if you'll excuse me, I think Representative Beard would like to ask you a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to either of the testifiers. A little while ago there was talk about the necessity of jump-starting this solar thing and to get this industry up and running. We did that with wind. I contend we're still doing it with wind. I know in the fiscal cliff negotiations here a few months ago, there was a desperate attempt by the American Wind Energy Association to renew the 1.7 cent production payment. Two questions for you. Coupled with that, there used to be a 30% production tax, income tax credit that went. Is that still been renewed? Yeah, did they let that lapse? Is that still going, and is that part of the 1.7?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, somebody in the room, perhaps from the industry, correct me, but I think the option during the stimulus era was that people could either take the production incentive or take the investment tax credit, and I don't think on when the investment tax credit is still available. Is that right? That's correct.
Okay.
And on the solar energy, only the investment tax credit is available. There's no production tax credit on the solar energy.
Mr. Chair,
and the solar energy investment tax credit expires at the end of 2016, which is one of the reasons why Representative Hortman's bill is anxious to get the industry robustly started before 2016, because the advantage we have is that the federal taxpayers are supporting getting the electricity costs in Minnesota low and getting this industry started. So 2016 is a really important date to get up and running by.
Representative Beard?
I see. Perhaps we'll wait for, in case some wind people come up, maybe I'll have another follow-on question about how much longer until we've actually got this thing rooted, because it's only been since like 1978, but more about that later. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Beard. Thank you to the testifiers. Thank you both. Next, please introduce yourself for the record and share with us your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Betsy Engelking, and I'm the Vice President at Geronimo Energy, which is a Minnesota company that employs Minnesota people that is in the business of developing wind and solar projects. I'd like to thank Chair Hortman for her thought going into this bill. I think if we look back to the beginning of session and when we started holding education sessions, we talked about a number of things. One of the things, and something I haven't heard as much tonight, is the jobs that are produced in Minnesota by the renewable energy industry. I have 32 employees that are extremely important to us. Their families are extremely important to Minnesota. And in addition, we support possibly tangentially more than 400 employees in the state of Minnesota that perform services for us, including consulting, construction, and other and environmental services. This bill does everything that we looked at doing. When we discussed solar with you, we talked about the fact that there were different market segments and that we needed to find a bill that takes care of all of the market segments. This bill provides a place for residential, provides a place for commercial, and also provides a place for utility scale solar. And we support the thoughtful approaches that went into all three of those divisions. We believe that this bill will create a number of jobs in Minnesota, that this bill will allow new businesses to come to Minnesota and to open up, and that it will allow us to lock in manufacturing and other jobs that we will be able to continue into the future. I urge you to vote in favor of House File 956.
Thank you very much. Go ahead and state your name. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I am Beth Soholt with Wind on the Wires and also with the Clean Energy and Jobs Campaign. I want to thank Chair Hortman for putting together a thoughtful bill. And I want to speak specifically to the wind pieces. Representative Beard, looking forward to your questions. I think that although the past success of the wind is not a prediction of the, you know, it's not a guarantee of the future, what we have seen in the implementation of the 2007 legislation, the Renewable Energy Standard, is that utilities have done a terrific job with that standard. They have been able to bring wind energy onto the system economically and reliably, and have been very thoughtful about moving the transmission pieces that have been needed in the region. The fact that we're adding a little bit of to the renewable energy standard in this bill will allow the 3,000 jobs that the wind industry has created in the state to to continue and flourish, and will strengthen our clean energy mix. And I have every confidence that the utilities will be able to do the extra that we're adding on the renewable energy standard in the terrific way that they have in the past 5 years. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Beer.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I want to talk about the jobs thing for just a minute, and if I still feel like it, I'll ask another question about wind. But Ms. Engelking, you've talked about jobs. Several people have talked about jobs here tonight. I want to speak from the perspective of productivity for just a moment, which is very important in the economy of any state, any country. There is about, I think the number is about 16,000 megawatts of electricity consumed in Minnesota every year, doing everything from ethanol to making paper to steel or just running the lights in this place. There are so many people that do that. Let's call it 10,000 people. Produce all that power, and we buy it and we use it. You talked about all these new jobs that are being incentivized in because of wind and solar and so on. Are you anticipating that some of those 10,000 people will be displaced? And mind you, that's just a number I grabbed for an example. Are they going to be displaced, or are we going to add that on top of that to still sell the same 16,000 megawatts of power, only we're going to be less productive while we do it?
Ms. Engelking.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, I you know, can't speak specifically to your numbers. Our experience in implementing the wind standard in the state is that we have created new jobs, not at the expense of existing jobs. I think that as Representative Garofalo pointed out, this energy is not actually meant to close down plants that aren't already closing down. It is meant to fulfill future requirements of the energy grid in Minnesota, and that will come from retirements of plants that have lived their useful life. It will come from new growth on the system, which I know that a lot of companies have talked about their flat system right now. That doesn't mean that there's no growth expected in the future on the system. And so I would expect that for the large part, this will be new jobs, and they will be productive jobs.
Well, Representative Beard.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. I just want the committee to consider that productivity is very important, and so many people, there's so many labor hours that produce a whole lot of power in this state. We're still producing the same amount, but we're adding more people at the moment. Until these plants are shut down, then I have a hunch that employment will probably fall. We'll probably be importing some other, because I'll remind you that this is low density and widely dispersed power. It takes a lot of people to go out and collect it, whether it's solar or whether it's wind. It's just not all concentrated in one small place where people can go to work. So while it utilities, they're amazing engineers, as I said the other day, they'll make anything work. But whether it works as efficiently and productively as possible, that's my concern. That's my question. So, and I think I'll pass on another wind question right now, Mr. Chair, but thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Representative Beard. Thank you to the testifiers. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Steve Morse. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Environmental Partnership. We are a coalition of more than 75 environmental nonprofits of conservation, environmental, people of faith who have come together because of the issues we share and concern about. This legislation, I should say that we represent several hundred thousand Minnesotans in our combined membership. Every year we pick a limited agenda of items that across the community we feel are very important and are high priority items. This legislation that this committee is about to vote on is one of our priorities that we've selected. We feel it's very important for the future of our great outdoors to give us cleaner air, to protect the health of all of us, as well as the health of our environment. Every year we ship something on the magnitude of $20 billion out of the state to buy energy. We'd like to keep more of that in the state to create jobs and have a cleaner environment for us all. The last point I'd like to make is that we do polling fairly regularly, and we were in the field in January with an extensive statewide poll. And for, I don't know, the number of years we've been asking these questions, this issue continues to be wildly popular. The public thinks we are way, way more advanced as it relates to renewables and clean energy than we really are. when we ask them about a 10% solar energy standard, 73% of Minnesotans say, yes, we should definitely do that, and they'd be willing to pay to make that happen. And so we encourage you to go ahead, and we'd like to thank Representative Portman for the leadership, and Representative Morgan and others who've been leading on this issue.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Next testifier. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ben Gerber. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I wish I could come here and testify in support of even one piece in this bill, and I believe that to adequately represent my members, we couldn't do that. I think it's been really frustrating to sit in some of these hearings, and we've heard a lot of people from the industries that will benefit. So you have the solar people, and you have groups like Win on the Wires that whose members are made of the people that will benefit. We've had very few people come in to actually discuss from a ratepayer perspective. We are ratepayers, and so we've heard a lot of mention of, well, the utilities want this or the munis want this, but nobody's actually really, we feel, has actually sat down and thought about what would happen to the ratepayer. And there's significant cost impacts here. I know a lot has been made about the RES compliance reports that were filed. You know, we've disputed that. There's an open docket, as I've said before, in front of the Public Utilities Commission. I mean, one of the major things is we took one utility's wind farm that was calculated at an average monthly price, which we believe is not the adequate way to calculate it. And when you look at the actual hourly pricing compared to where that wind farm was to the MISO market prices, we paid a $5.5 million premium in 1 year for that energy, and I think that's a real concern. And based on what we have here, I was speaking with a member today that employs a lot of union jobs. Actually, that this 1.33% tax would actually cost them $1.46 million a year. They produce a global commodity. Where are they going to offset that price? It's going to come at the reduction of jobs. And so, and that's a real concern. You hear, we kept hearing this is going to create jobs, but now we're saying, well, one type of jobs is better than another type of jobs. And I think that's a real concern for the business community in the state of Minnesota. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. While Mr. Johnson comes down to go next, I noticed that after Mr. Johnson, I see two more testifiers, but okay. And so we are getting close to a vote here. Mr. Johnson, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I think you all know that my name is Joel Johnson. I'm with the Minnesota Rural Electric Association. I think you've all know that our membership has serious concerns with this bill. There are some things that we had hoped to work with that showed promise, particularly the value of solar. Discussions we've had with the administration, we thought we're headed in a positive direction. They've kind of gone backwards from conversations we've had. So I hope that the author will continue working on this bill, trying to improve it. We're willing to help in this regard. However, at this point, we cannot support the bill as it stands. And honestly, passing this bill in the form it's in would be very irresponsible. And I say that because I don't think there's anyone in this room who fully understands all of the impacts that this bill is going to have on rates, on reliability, on safety, on the operation of our utilities. And I'll be quick and, you know, just take the price tag. I've had conversations with a number of the members of this committee who believe that the only impact on rates that this bill is going to have is the 1.33% assessment. And that simply isn't true. In addition to that 1.33% tax on electric bills, we're going to have the impact of the value of solar calculation compared to the avoided cost of utilities is going to be reflected in bills. The cost of the energy that this solar the energy generated by these solar panels, the energy that's displaced and have to be sold on the market, there's going to be a cost to that. There's going to be a cost to potential upgrades to the distribution system, which is completely different than the transmission system. There's going to be more wear and tear on that distribution system. There's going to be cost to the utilities for building utility scale solar generation that isn't subsidized by the 1.33% assessment. With the expansion of NetMeter and DG, there are going to be also going to be impacts to the safety, the reliability of the distribution grid, and I don't think that we've had a full enough discussion over that. So far, in all of our hearings, I don't think we've had an engineer from the distribution side come and talk to you about the impacts that this is going to have on the distribution grid. And again, that's a different design system than the transmission grid, and it's going to have different impacts. And then finally, the last point I want to make is, with this bill, we're making the same mistake that we made with the 2007 renewable energy standard, which is this assumption that if we treat every utility the same, we're treating them fairly. We have different needs. Co-ops have a completely different daily demand curve than other utilities do. And I have to clarify a point that was made earlier, that solar is always going to be in the peak demand period. That simply isn't true. Take the example of Minn Kota, which provides power for the co-ops in the northern part of the state. They are a winter peaking system. Their daily peaks typically occur in January and February from 6 to 9 p.m. when the sun has long set. This is not going to help their peaks. And even for the southern co-ops, our daily peaks in the summertime typically occur between 6 and 8 o'clock at night. Again, when the solar production drops off precipitously. So again, I would ask, as we move forward, that we take into consideration the different types of utilities and the different impacts, and think all of these things through more thoroughly so that we fully understand what this is going to do to our electric system. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Welcome to the committee. Thank you, gentlemen. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Lynn Hinkle, Policy Director for Minnesota Solar Energy Industry Association, and want to extend our thanks to Chair Hortman for her work in developing a couple of significant value propositions for Minnesota's economy. One that we've heard a lot about this evening, and justifiably, is the value of solar rate, determining a fair market rate for the installation of solar based on transparent metrics. The other piece that I think is really important to discuss is the support that this bill gives for manufacturing in Minnesota. The Made in Minnesota provisions are a critical and important piece of this bill, and we support that provision because we think that it's not only going to assist with some of the original equipment manufacturers in the state, but it's going to provide a spiraling multiplier effect for many of the solar manufacturing suppliers that are manufacturing in our state currently. There are over 35 companies that provide solar manufacturing supplies, components, materials for the production of solar collectors in the state that employ over 1,500 people, and those suppliers themselves in turn employ an equal number of next tier suppliers and manufacturers. That's a significant number of jobs and a significant amount of economic impact in Minnesota. And I will conclude by saying that I'm only drawing this out, I'm trying to expose for the committee the potential that solar has based on the Made in Minnesota provisions in this bill to grow an industry. We're not a startup. We're not creating something. We're in the process of being able to expand and grow, and we think that's a significant and important message for us going forward in the support of this bill.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dustin Dennison with Abide Energy Innovations, and we are a solar developer and installer in the metro. And speaking about jobs, we install locally Minnesota-made products. We hire Minnesotans. We keep our jobs. We keep our work local. The people that we hire, they've been displaced from other industries. Our company has been acknowledged by the Department of Labor for our hiring practices because we work exclusively with the City of Minneapolis Renew programs, people that have gone through retraining, experienced long bouts of unemployment. That's the people we're attracted to. That's the people we hire. We're going to employ more people this summer. In fact, we will double our workforce. And we're going to do that also by installing more Minnesota-made products. And in turn, that's going to allow our manufacturing base to also hire more people. I support this bill wholeheartedly. And I also, my nose starts to cringe when I see 2% also, because I think there's a much more potential. I don't think the sky is going to fall. I think the sun is going to shine, and we're going to create clean energy, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Thank you.
Thank you. Next testifier. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. Please state your name for the record.
Sure. My name is Julie Pierce from Minnesota Power. And obviously, I'm the one you guys have been waiting for since I'm the last one.
It looks like it, Ms. Pierce.
my job at Minnesota Power is to create and identify the least cost power supply for our customers in our service territory. And Minnesota Power has been engaged with this bill, and we will continue to be engaged with this bill. So I'm just going to make two quick points, and we can move forward. But Minnesota Power continues to be concerned with the reliability, the safety, and the cost impacts of this proposed draft energy bill. Moving toward a more diverse power supply has value for customers when done in partnership with policy that gives the utility, who's ultimately responsible for the reliability of the electric service in our area, the flexibility to identify the most prudent path to meet the long-term goals put in place by these policies. Forcing specific technologies through increasing customer cost is not the best policy. The RES proposed in this draft bill brings too much too fast. And before stakeholders have all the information needed to derive a prudent policy increase, we do not have before us the reliability impacts from our regional partners at MISO, nor do we have customer cost impacts from utilities like Minnesota Power. We have a uniquely high load factor in Minnesota Power. We do not gain the same value from solar energy. Our customers do not gain the same value from solar energy that only shines during the daylight hours. 70% of our customers' energy consumption is not during the daylight hours. The proposed language includes studies, in part to peel back the onion on these items that I mentioned on cost and reliability and safety. This information should help form our policy, as they are the critical insights to this expanded renewable and distributed generation goal. And I just have to say I was surprised that all of the study and all of the impact analysis was at the very last pages of the bill. To me, that should be up front. We should be looking at this before we set policy to ensure that we aren't doing harm to our customers. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Pearson. Thank you to everyone who came down to testify tonight. We'll wrap up with a final comment from Representative Garofalo and then from the bill's author. Representative Garofalo.
Oh, well, Mr. Chairman, are you sure that no other member of the committee wants to make any statements? I don't want to jump to the front of the line.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Representative Scott, I'm sorry.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I keep, I guess, going back to one of the first committee hearings we had, and someone asked the chair about what issues she had with the utilities being a so-called monopoly. And she said that she really liked the free markets, and she was for the free markets. And I would submit to you tonight that this bill is anything but free market-driven. The free markets look at the facts and base their decisions on what the facts are. And we've heard testimony here tonight that the facts haven't come into play, the facts about what it's going to do to the grid, what it's going to do to ratepayers and others involved in this industry. This bill picks winners and losers. It subsidizes solar and wind. That is not a free market concept. Sending a market signal was another quote that was heard in this committee in the past hearings. And we're sending a real strong signal to the friends that are behind us here in the solar and the wind industry. This is a real strong signal for them. It's a strong signal that there's going to start being dollar signs for them. Selling back to the grid and making your neighbors pay for it, that is not a free market concept. The Made in Minnesota effort to bail out a company that has already spent millions of dollars in public money is also not a free market concept. So I would encourage a no vote on this bill.
Thank you. Other members with comments?
Mr. Chair, just a brief comment, if I may.
Representative Beard and then Hornstein.
Well, thank you.
I'm sorry. Representative Beard.
Oh, sorry.
And then Hornstein.
Pointed at me.
I'm sorry. I apologize. It's getting late.
It's very late.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'll be brief. We made a lot of comments, and there's a lot to be considered. But there's been a lot of talk about the value of solar. And like there's something magical about electrons that come from a solar panel. Members, the value of electricity isn't how it's made. The value of electricity is what we do with it. And you've heard testimony from some of these folks who actually are in the trenches helping our businesses compete every day, whether they're making flour or whether they're making ethanol or whether they're making steel or paper. These people require large amounts of reliable baseload power. Even running a place like this, a school, a Target store, a grocery store, the value is in what it does for us, not in how it's made. Folks, we've created, I call it the flavor of the month. Right now we're getting into bouquet fuels, we call it, in the refining business. This is kind of what we're getting into. We're getting into bouquet electricity. How it's made seems to be important all of a sudden, seems to rise to the level of legislative intervention and subsidization. Members, I hope we can come to our senses and calm this stuff down going forward, because there's a lot of really just regular folks out there trying to do big things and employ thousands of people, and they really aren't as impressed with how it's made as what they do with it and the value they get in exchange for the dollars they're paying. So I'd encourage you to vote no thank you on this bill.
Thank you, Representative Beard. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Chair Hortman, and thanks to all the advocates that are here. To the last two points that have been made around subsidy, there's $1 for renewables for every $7 of subsidy at the federal level for fossil fuels. And so we're simply evening the playing field. And it's very necessary that we do that for all the reasons that have been stated tonight. But I want to also underscore the climate crisis that we're in now. This is a necessity to do this. And it's not an option. It's not something that we're in now. This is a necessity to do this. And it's not an option. It's not something that we're going to, on the buffet of energy options and picking which one tastes better. This is an absolute necessity if we're going to turn back the clock on climate change. And I thought that Will Steger's testimony really spoke to that. So, members, this is just an attempt to sort of even things out a little bit. And I think it's the right direction to go. I applaud Chair Hortman, and I'm going to be voting an enthusiastic yes and hopes that this bill can work through the process and we get to the floor and we're able to really make a very, very important historic leap forward in our energy policy in the state. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Quam.
I hate to disagree with previous representative, Mr. Chair, but I think he has to hit refresh, because in the last few years we've spent tens of billions of dollars supporting solar and renewable, giving loan guarantees and monies to solar companies. You know, half a billion here, half a billion there adds up, and it actually it's in the other direction of where there's more support. But to this bill, instead of talking the federal, which they couldn't afford to subsidize, and they failed in those companies, the Build Minnesota, we keep hearing we're spending billions of dollars for fuel outside. We are, you know, going to be creating, you know, the jobs here, the Build Minnesota. Well, frankly, during the testimony, I asked more than once, and in the main subcomponents, the cells, are the vast majority of the cost of this equipment. So it's like, if it was built here, then all you're doing is assembling, and if you read the language of the bill, that's what build in Minnesota means. We get the components from outside and we hook them together and we call it built in Minnesota, even if in the U.S. the number I was told in previous committee was up to about 80% of the cost if you buy U.S. cells. 80% of the cost is outside the state of Minnesota. If you go Asian, and they said there's a quality issue, so they won't last as long, it's still above 50%. So the majority of the cost of these units that are built in Minnesota actually are going outside the state. So that and the fact that we're picking and choosing even between clean, carbon-free, renewable, when we don't count, we aren't honest in saying hydro is clean, carbon-free. Actually, it's baseline. You can turn that dial. If we're going to approach this bill, it'd be nice if we were, honest on some of these points. But I think I've said enough on the details. I would love to be able to vote for a forward-thinking, technically sound bill, but I find this bill lacking on several levels and won't be able to vote for it.
Thank you. Representative Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just two comments. There's a lot. This is a whole new area for me. I have some experience with the tax credits on the federal side, but what I haven't seen is a lot of from the opposition. I think all these concerns are valid regarding the disparities in the different utility companies, the effect on the distribution, the transmission, the effect on the ratepayers, it seems to me that we've done this before, so there should be a way to take what we've the data we have, the capital, how much it took, the effect on the ratepayers through wind and compare it to solar. I don't know. But I haven't seen any sort of something in front of me that says that this is not going to work. You tell me it's not going to work because the rates are going to go up and your profits are going to go down and there's not enough time. I'm not saying that that's not true. I just don't see it on paper. And this free market thing is just we don't want to impede the free markets. Our livelihood depends on it. But at the same time, here, when it comes to climate change and when it comes to increasing renewable energy sources, and then it is within our power, and it is our job to legislate. To enact legislation that is in the best interest of the state, and that we have the power to act to legislate for the general welfare of the citizens, and that trumps the free market. At times it does. It poses burdens on it. But it is absolutely necessary sometimes. So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Before I go to Representative Garofalo, are there any other members who haven't spoken yet want to speak? Representative Yarusso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to weigh in on some of the economic arguments that have been made. Whatever percentage we talk about in terms of the cost of the solar panels that comes from outside of Minnesota, 100% of the cost of coal and natural gas is spent outside of Minnesota because we have zero resources of coal and natural gas within the state. Much of our power generation that comes from large hydro is also coming from outside the state. And large hydro, although it is beautiful from the point of view of carbon, does have significant environmental impacts, and you can ask the people in Manitoba about that. And while maximizing the amount of money made is a laudable goal, and our capitalistic society is built on it, it is not the only goal of society. And we heard talk about productivity. Productivity, as it's typically used in business, they use return on investment to talk about how much money you make off the money. Productivity is a measure of how much money you make off the labor. And labor is on the denominator of that fraction. And there's two ways you can maximize productivity. You can make more money with the same people, or you can make the same money with fewer people. And unfortunately, one of the ways that has frequently been used in the last 10, 20 years is by minimizing the denominator, laying off people. And so when we talk about the jobs that are created and then criticize that because it's going to lower productivity, think about that. That when you talk about lowering the productivity because you're going to employ all these people, what you're saying is we're valuing the earnings that are made more than we're valuing the people that have the jobs. And so if a tiny number of people at the top are going to make more money compared to the large numbers of people at the bottom that make less. And our economy needs jobs. The lack of jobs on the lower end of the economy are one of the things that is holding us back from the recovery at the moment, because those are the people that go out and spend their money in the state and in the local area. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Russo. Before I turn it over to Representative Garofalo, I'd just like to thank everybody for being charitable to the vice chair tonight. So, Representative Garofalo?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I know it's been a long night. I'll try to be brief. First of all, I do want to thank my friend, Representative Hortman, for her chairing this committee. And one of the downsides to being friends with someone is you can really go after them in a committee and not be worried about them taking it personally. Mr. Chairman and members, please realize that the weapon of government mandates is a very powerful weapon. And the concern I see in this bill is a DFL majority that is waving around its newfound weapon like a toy, like a kid who just found their dad's gun without realizing the consequences of playing with that toy. The reality is that we have, let's take a look at the reality of the myths versus facts in this situation. The facts are that this bill displaces zero existing generation in the system. Zero. This bill displaces zero cost savings for transmission and distribution. And if you want carbon-free energy, if you want renewable energy, there are far more efficient and effective ways to do this. If you want to create jobs through a renewable energy industry, there are far more effective and efficient ways to do this. But Mr. Chairman and members, if there's one final reality that makes me give me pause for a sense of optimism with this bill, it's this. Even with the Democrats in total control of our state right now, the reality is there is no way there are 34 DFL senators and 68 DFL House members who will vote for this bill to put it into law. There is no way that members can look at these facts on the absolute destruction of the rural economy and municipal power agencies with the increases in their bills and sign this into law. There is no chance of it. And so, Mr. Chairman and members, I'll be voting no today. I'll be a strong, I think Representative Hornstein used the word a strong no, or a strong yes. I'll be a strong no on this bill. But I am very hopeful and optimistic that as the public engages in this conversation, and we're going to see this bill go the way of the business-to-business sales tax. It's going to go the way of the gun grab control legislation earlier this session. It's going to go the way of the stoplight surveillance program with photo cops. That we're going to see an active and engaged citizenry that's going to stop this legislation and put forward more thoughtful and sensible legislation. Mr. Chairman and members, I ask for a no vote on this bill.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to especially thank Bob Eliff for the considerable hours of time he spent drafting almost all of the legislation that comprised this bill. I don't know that he's seen what the outside of this building looks like in weeks and maybe months. I'd like to thank Mary Faust and Peter Strohmeyer have worked considerable hours extra because of the long hours we spent on the bill. There are several members whose bills are in here. I'd like to thank them for their efforts. Representative Morgan, Representative Seltzer, Representative Hornstein, Representative Falk, Representative Kelly, Representative Ray Dean, who's not here, Representative McNamer, who's not here. I'd like to really thank the utility lobbyists who have worked with me. I'm especially grateful to the ones who hate it the most and yet are still engaged in the conversation about how to make it a better bill. Around here, it's really easy to kill a bill. It's really easy to generate fear and kill a bill. And but what's hard is to make a bill better and is to make something that Minnesota wants and needs and will improve life for Minnesotans now and going forward. And I need for the people who hate it the most to continue to be engaged and help me to make it a better bill. Members, I also want to thank all the clean energy advocates who have come forward and rallied around the legislation and brought some of the ideas forward. This is how democracy works. We are a responsive institution. And people out there across the state brought these ideas to us. Representative Morgan didn't think up the great things in his House File 773 or 1146. And Representative Hornstein didn't think up the great things in House File 880. Representative Falk thought up all the things in his bill. And I didn't think up the things in the governor's bill. There are a lot of people, many of whom have dedicated their lives to energy and clean energy. And I'd like to thank all the people in the solar industry and the wind industry and the activists and the youth who helped bring these measures before the legislature and have asked us to act. And members tonight, I hope you'll join me in acting and voting yes on the bill.
Thank you, Representative Hortman. Representative Hortman renews her motion that House File 956, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Commerce and Consumer Protection, Finance, and Policy. A roll call has been requested. The clerk will call the roll.
Hortman.
Aye.
Morgan.
Aye.
Garofalo.
No.
Allen.
Yes.
Beard.
Nay.
Falk.
Aye.
Hackbarth.
No.
Hornstein.
Yes.
Kelly.
No.
Mazin.
Yes.
Quam.
Yeah.
Scott.
No.
Seltzer.
Yes.
Urusso.
Yes.
There being 8 ayes and 6 noes, the motion prevails. The bill is passed and moved on to Commerce and Consumer Protection and Policy and Finance. Members, the meeting is adjourned.